Hi there. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm Fran Costigan, and this is the December 2023 live event for Essential Vegan Desserts at Ruby. I can hardly believe we've come to this point in the year. Somehow this year feels to me like it has just flown by. The older I get, and I'm really getting up there, or I am up there, but I fully embrace every day. It seems like time flies. So I'm so appreciative of your taking time out of your busy day or night, depending where you are in the world, to spend this next bit of time with me. And we're going to talk about the holidays because we've got Christmas coming up and New Year's and Kwanzaa, and whatever your tradition is, I hope that I'll be able to give you some tips. I will also be answering questions that have come in. Before I get started on the topic, I want to remind any of my students in Essential Vegan Desserts, I've got a number of brand new ones and many who are still in progress, and some who have graduated, if you haven't yet joined the private Facebook group for Essential Vegan Desserts, please do that. It's a great, fun, friendly little group. It's a nice place to ask some questions. Maybe you're looking for a new mixer or have some questions about a piece of equipment, or just, hi, this is where I'm from. Where are you from? I'd like to follow you on Instagram kind of thing. For matters of technical nature, write to support at ruby.com. Our team is fabulous, as many of you know, and your questions will be answered really quickly. Questions about a particular assignment, check the Q&A on the dashboard. You may find the answer to your question is there already. And if not, just write a question and I will answer it. I do all the grading for Essential Vegan Desserts and I answer all the questions. And everyone here, feel free to write to me at fran@ruby.com. I would love it if any of our Ruby students, Essential Vegan Desserts, those of you who are on Instagram or Facebook, hashtag Ruby Plants, hashtag Essential Vegan Desserts, because then I can find you, we can find one another. And that would be just great. So about this particular topic, which was basically, you know, I was thinking, what can we do to make a busy time of the year, a holiday time, a happy time, no stress, have fun, within the realm of there is often a lot to do. And, you know, I was really thinking about this in terms of my own life, which has changed a lot. I used to have lots of family coming in and lots of friends and different kind of events that are happening now. I actually have, my son is coming in to New York from California, and my daughter who lives nearby is going away. But there have been a number of wonderful parties. And so I'm really busy with quite a lot of baking. And there are things that I do to make that process happy and cheerful and unstressful. But something I think we don't talk about enough is that we need to take care of ourselves too. And part of that, I think, is making sure when you know, think of this in terms of, this is a desserts course, I'm going to be talking about desserts. Maybe this time of the year, we're going to be eating more treats than we normally do. You know, when I'm testing recipes or making things, I do a fair amount of tasting. It's a good thing to remember to nourish yourself. So I prep meals ahead that are easy to reheat. assemble and make sure I get plenty of protein and greens. Last night I did a big bake of biscotti. I did a double recipe. I made the logs and then they have to rest, and then I baked them and I cut them and I put them back in the oven, and then I packed them in a container to chill them so I could dip some in chocolate. But in between, what I had on my stove was a pot of what I call any vegetable, anything you have in the refrigerator, miso soup. So I take a pot and I put fresh water in it, a piece of kombu seaweed, and it was like a clean out the refrigerator kind of a thing. I had two shiitake mushrooms, I had one carrot, I had a little piece of shallot and some tofu and ginger. And I just let it simmer while I was doing these other things. And I was able to have a really nice, healthful, hearty snack. And with miso, I added the miso, not to the boiling stock. You don't ever want to do that. You want to add, because not that anything will happen to the miso, to the taste of it, but for the nutritional benefits, you don't want to boil your stock once your miso is in. And then I had this wonderful, satisfying dinner with lots of protein, or snack. It was really a snack that turned into a dinner. And you can be sure I tasted a number of biscotti because I really, really like them. Another thing to do is to remember to dress appropriately when you are busy in the kitchen making food. And by that, I mean wear comfortable, supportive shoes. I heard from a number of people during the COVID lockdown 2 years ago that their feet were hurting. One of our friends, a Ruby graduate actually, who lives in the neighborhood, mentioned that she had developed a problem. I said, are you wearing slippers instead of your clogs or your sneakers? And she said, yes. If you're going to be on your feet a lot in the kitchen, you need supportive shoes. So that's what I have to say about that. Now, you want to think about smart storage solutions and pantry staples before you get started. I'm going to be talking about pantry staples that have to do with making desserts. I mean, over my shoulder over there, I have a whole shelf full of Rancho Gordo beans and kombu seaweed, and those are pantry staples for me. But for making desserts, I have a couple of different kind of flour. I always have all-purpose flour, whole wheat pastry flour, spelt flour, and gluten-free flour. I keep my flours in my refrigerator because I'm not using bleached items, and I want to guard against rancidity. So my flours are in airtight containers in the fridge or in the freezer. Now, I'm in Philadelphia and it's starting to get cold. And I will tell you that sometimes when there's overflow or, you know, during a busy holiday season, I might have more. I just bought a giant bag of organic oranges and a few bags of organic lemons because I'm going to be making some citrus-based desserts. And they're actually out on my terrace. I'm also lucky enough to have a neighbor with a standalone freezer and has offered, I've got my own shelf. So we're not all that lucky. But, you know, since I did my renovation, I have a nice new refrigerator with plenty of room. I had said last month that one of the things that I do to prepare for upcoming holidays is to kind of do a spring cleaning. And part of that is, you know, well, any time of the year, I go through my fridge and freezer every week and I see, you know, first in, first out, what has to be used. I don't like food waste, and I'm guessing that you don't either. And I use what I have. But again, getting back to the pantry staples, yesterday I needed to go and purchase more whole wheat pastry flour. When I bring flour home from the grocery store, and also oats and seeds and nuts, I pop them in the freezer for a little while, and then I decide what's going in my fridge or not. I have dried fruit. I always have dates, which are technically not a dried fruit, and prunes. And because I like to make fruit pastes with these, both to add to desserts and to use in desserts. My colleague and friend Charlene Nolan is a fan of dried prunes, which are today called plums, dried plums, as I am. So I have dried fruit, fresh fruit, and frozen fruit. Frozen fruit can be great. I had started buying cranberries as soon as I saw them in the market, and I've got a load in my freezer. And then, of course, salts and spices, and you want to make sure that your spices are fresh. So I label everything with a date, which makes preparing for a holiday season a lot easier. I know I said last month, I said, sniff your spices, and I got some funny emails about that. But what I meant was make sure that they're fresh. If your spices don't smell like anything, they're not going to add any benefit to anything that you make. You want to have cocoa powder, both alkalized, alkalized, which is Dutch process, and non-alkalized, which are can be used interchangeably if you're doing hot chocolate. We have a great assignment in Essential Vegan Desserts for testing these two kinds of cocoa powder and writing about the differences that are perceived. So if you're making hot cocoa, and that's a great holiday beverage made with any plant milk that you like, you can use either cocoa. But remember that when you're using cocoa powder, then I'm talking about unsweetened cocoa powder, pure cocoa powder in a dessert, you have to know if the recipe is calling for alkalized or natural. I also have a variety of fats in my house. I tend to use for my desserts sunflower oil and grapeseed oil, which are neutral flavored oils. And I buy good oils and keep them. Oftentimes I keep them refrigerated. I certainly keep them in a dark container. I use extra virgin olive oil as well when I want a slightly more assertive taste. And the fat that I use the least is coconut oil, but there are a few places where a little bit is important. And in today's world, there are some really nice vegan butters. 25 years ago, when I was developing vegan desserts, there were no nice vegan butters. Today, there are a number of them, and they are different. So for baking, you really want to use the sticks. You don't want to use the spreads because there's too much liquid. There's too much water in those. And in the course, we have actually got a recipe for making your own. And then another very important group of ingredients to have on hand are the gelatinizing ingredients, agar powder, which replaces gelatin, bovine gelatin, and starches such as arrowroot, cornstarch, and tapioca starch. Some people use a bit of gum, xanthan, or guar. And of course, plant milks. My plant milk of choice, as some of you may know, because you've heard me say this, is oat. I like the natural sweetness of oat milk. And also, I don't have to worry about allergies. If I'm having a group of people in or making dessert to bring to a holiday party, and I don't know if anyone has any allergies or other dietary considerations based on ingredients, I make two assumptions. Well, I make three. One, that someone will be a soy avoider, which I am not, but I don't use soy. And soy milk is great for desserts. It's nice and rich. And I don't use a nut milk because I would be concerned that there would be people allergic to nuts. So I find that oat milk works really, really well. I keep containers that I buy from the refrigerated section in my refrigerator, but I also keep some of the shelf stable containers around, and I keep some tofu around. And then, of course, decorating. decorating equipment. So I've got some vegan sprinkles, I've got some vegan marshmallows, and I have gold luster dust and things like that. Something that's very helpful and I think is really kind of a trick in a way is I use parchment paper. This is unbleached parchment paper, and I buy full size and cut it to my quarter sheet pans, 8-sheet pans, and full size and half. But when I am, you know, I think I just gave you a list of things that I come home from the market with. What I do is I prep as soon as I can, and that might be part of my shopping in the same way that I prepare my vegetables when I get home so they're ready. I will take the nuts that I buy and roast them. And I roast nuts low and slow. And then maybe I'm going to grind nuts. Well, for biscotti, I need a lot of nuts. As you can see, I did some grinding last night of toasted and cooled, smells delicious, almonds. When I'm transferring from the food processor, I do it over a piece of parchment paper. The same thing when I've chopped chocolate in quantity, I do it over, when I transfer to a bag or a container, I do it over a piece of parchment paper so that anything that spills out a little, and something will, can be saved. Your counter will stay clean and you won't have lost anything. I think that ice cube trays are good to have, and labels and Sharpies and a notebook. Write down what you've done. I'm actually old school about that. I kind of like writing more than I like things in my computer. So, you know, Ruby people know that mise en place is key, and it is. Make sure you have room in your refrigerator and freezer, and look in your refrigerator, freezer, and pantry before you go shopping for the things that you need. And that's what I would say. I don't think, this is just my opinion, excuse me, I don't think holiday time, when we have lots of different things to do, is the best time to try recipes that you have found or do experimenting. That's probably a better thing to do well ahead of the time. I like to do things that are tried and true. I might assemble them and decorate them differently. But again, I don't want to take the time to think, I wonder if I swap this for this, is that going to work? Time management is really important. So I'm going to ask Patrick, our wonderful producer, to show you a couple of photos that I sent in today for you to see. One is a bûche de Noël, which is also called a Christmas log. And typically they're made with formed from a rolled cake, which is possible, but very tricky. I love doing this cake. This is a photograph from my book, Vegan Chocolate. And what I do is I bake a chocolate cake in a half sheet pan, and then I make templates, again with my parchment paper, of the size I want. So the bottom piece is longer. You can see that it's shaped. And the filling in that particular cake is ganache, and the design on the top, which is, I'm sorry for this crinkly noise, but that's the parchment paper. That is more ganache, but used at a different temperature. So it's really easy. The mushrooms that you see on that board are made from almond. Well, I make my own marzipan, which is very, very easy. When that book was published, we didn't know about aquafaba. So today I might make meringue mushrooms like I did way back in the day, or these marzipan, and then cake crumbs, and you can do whatever you want. So it serves a lot of people, or you can make a smaller version of that. And this dessert, which looks time consuming and fancy is really a very easy dessert. I want you to think about thinking in terms of components. And this is part of time management. You look at a recipe and think, what do I have to do to make this part of the dessert? How long will it take to mix, to bake, to cool? Can it be frozen? And once you have, you know, take this cake as an example, and then you have cake, you have ganache, or you could have I'm making another one for Friday night, but I'm going to fill it with chocolate pudding. And that will hold for a couple of days in the refrigerator too. And the ganache, which I always have ganache. I've got some actually reliquifying over there on my stove as we speak. So it's a great component dessert to make. So let's see, we have another photos and I am not seeing them. So I don't know what's next actually. Truffles. Okay. So again, this is a base of ganache, but it's a different proportion of chocolate to plant milk. So if there is anyone here, I want to tell you what ganache is. I know many of you know, but typically ganache is a percentage. It's an emulsion of two ingredients that don't really work together, but they do when you do the ganache properly. It's really easy. So it's a particular amount of chocolate and a particular amount of plant milk. We're not using cream. And you do a test to make sure that your ganache, a test of a small amount, make sure your ganache is set as you want. These are rolled in different toppings, so they look really beautiful, and nuts and seeds, whatever toppings you want, are going to bulk them up a little. I like serving smaller sizes than many people, and they're just a pleasure. Or you can just make, you know, shape them. I shape them kind of rough. I want them to look rough, and roll them in cocoa powder. You can do that too. I have another truffle that is made with orange juice and tahini and orange juice, tahini. Oh, and chocolate, of course. And I've made so many recently. I brought about 3 dozen to one party and I'm bringing some more. So I pour that out into a flat dish and I cut them into squares. And that's a really fast way to handle truffles. And all of this can stay in your freezer. And then there's also the miso soup that I was eating the other night. So I want you to think about that. Make sure that you nourish yourself. It's a time to make sure that you have protein and greens in your life. And I'm actually sipping ginger tea today. And enjoying the process. So time management is really, really important. I'm assuming you have other things to do in your life while you're making desserts for your party or decorating your table and so on. I was a real multitasker and I have trained myself not to be. And I'll tell you, I feel like I get a lot more done when I concentrate on one task at a time. Certainly when I'm toasting nuts or roasting nuts in my oven, I stay in the kitchen because once if you go to another room and you go, oh, I think that smells like roasted nuts, they are probably burned. So I roast nuts, I chop chocolate, and I prep granulated sweeteners. Here I have, this is super fine over here that I did in my blender, in my Vitamix. This one is, they're all labeled, so I know. That's the other thing. You really need to label things because it's very hard to remember. And this says organic cane bulk light grind. So I use that for most of my desserts. And over here is regular. And here are all of my cocoa powders and so on. So pretty much That's it. If you have some crumbs left, you find some crumbs in your freezer, why don't you use them? Use them as part of your dessert. So I think it's a good time for me to start answering questions. And you can still send some questions in. I'll be happy to answer them. Okay, Denise says, this is interesting. Denise can't have vinegar. Any recommendations for substitutions in baking recipes like muffins that call for apple cider vinegar? Yes, there are. But I want to explain the reason that you will see apple cider vinegar or vinegar in a lot of vegan baked goods is because it helps with the leavening. It's an acid and it helps the cakes to rise. Denise, I would try fresh lemon juice if I were you. We only use a teaspoon of vinegar to make a 9-inch cake, for example, or 12 muffins. So the percentage of acidity in lemon juice might not be the same as it is in the apple cider vinegar. You might want to add a teaspoon and a half. I don't expect you're going to taste the lemon. And if you did in some instances, it would actually be good. So give that a try. But I'm going to say what I say every single time, and that is when you are swapping out an ingredient that is listed in a recipe that you know is a good recipe, not something that you just find out in the Twitterverse or, you know, online and you don't know who wrote it. That's not it. Then definitely don't do that on holiday time or any time. Cut the recipe in half, Denise. Make 6 cupcakes or even 4. Quarter it and see how it goes. Hi, Linda. So Linda says, your chocolate torte to live for. So that is my breakthrough cake. If anybody has made it, I think it feels to me like the world has made it at this point. Linda wants to know if she can freeze it with the ganache glaze or only freeze the torte. I have frozen it with the glaze on and I defrost my cakes unwrapped and then pat it. The glaze will become dull and may crack. You can add another coating if you want. But, you know, I prefer to glaze afterwards. And Linda had a part 2 here. She wants to know if she can use white chocolate instead of bittersweet cocoa for the glaze. Yes, you can. It's hard to find a good tasting vegan white chocolate. There are some coming. Valrhona, for example, which makes a fine chocolate in general, and they have many vegan chocolates and they are all fair trade now and ethical, has a vegan white chocolate coming to market. It will have nuts in it. So, well, I was saying earlier that with ganache, there's a particular proportion for a pouring glaze. You're going to have more of the plant milk to chocolate with a thicker ganache to make truffles. It might be 1-to-1 or even a little less. And a drip will be somewhere in between. For the white chocolate, use much less plant milk and heat very slowly. Hi, Karen. Karen says she doesn't have a question, just a shout out to Chef Fran and Chef Char. Hi, Char. And she's thanking us for all we've contributed to the plant-based community. That's really nice, Karen. And thank you for everything that you're doing. So Heather H. is at 8,000 feet above sea level, and she's looking for advice about baking adjustments. That's actually very complicated. I was researching high altitude baking for essential vegan desserts. We have information on this in essential vegan desserts. We certainly have people who are living in, you know, in areas that are high altitude and all different levels. And what I learned, there are some basics about lowering your oven and changing the proportion of liquid and solids. What I've learned is the best thing to do is to go to these university presses. And I put a link right here in the Q&A that you can grab. They have great information. There it is. Good info on, thank you, Patrick, on high altitude cooking and baking. It turns out that even there are mini climates. So, you know, the next town over, there might be a different microclimate. The best thing to do is to do small portions and test. I know one of my son-in-law's best friends lives in Colorado and made my chocolate cake to live for without any adjustments. And she said the cake went all over her oven and we worked together. Hi, Gloria. Gloria also lives in a high altitude too. And what she's been doing is to do the recipe the way it was written and then make any adjustments. Most haven't needed any except cooking time. Well, thank you for that information, Gloria. I don't know if you're doing vegan desserts, but some of the batters that have a lot of liquid may need some adjustments, but that's great. Thank you. Hi, Chef Char. Speak of Chef Char. Chef Char, some of you may know, is a very, we're very good friends. I'm very blessed to have Char in my life. And she's a colleague at Ruby. She does, she's on the team Ruby as an instructor, and you may have had her grade some of your assignments. So Char says, I've seen people making chocolate covered blueberries on cookie platters. What's the best way for storage? How long can the cocoa covered berries last? That's a great question. You know, things get, they get trendy, I guess, because I'm seeing these chocolate covered blueberries too. It's interesting because one of the assignments in Essential Vegan Desserts is called chocolate dipping. And the students have to make a ganache of a particular percentage proportion and choose their choice, three different items to dip. Now, dipping in ganache and dipping in melted chocolate are two different things because ganache has liquid in it. So maybe something's going to get soggy. Though what you're talking about, Char, I've seen those as people are dipping blueberries in melted chocolate. It's said that you can store them for a couple of days in the refrigerator. I would put a toothpick in. I would do the dipping with the strawberries being cold because the chocolate's going to set faster that way. Maybe a toothpick and let them set. Do a couple, put them in the fridge and see if the chocolate dulls, depending on the kind of chocolate you use. I would add a little bit of fat, a little bit of extra virgin olive oil, for example, to the chocolate so it would stay shinier. You aren't going to do that. So see how the shine holds. Another thing you can do is something that I do with truffles that I either haven't dipped or dipped in chocolate, and then they get a little, you know, they've been hanging around for a while, they don't look as great as they do, is sprinkle some, through a very fine mesh sieve, sprinkle some cocoa powder over your chocolate covered blueberries and go for it. And that sounds delicious, delicious. You know, I have blueberries on my breakfast oatmeal every single day. Cheryl is asking about strudel. Cheryl would like to know how to make a pear and cranberry strudel. Well, strudel dough is a whole thing to make, but I believe you can buy it. And I used to make strudel using phyllo dough. Pear and cranberry is a filling that I cook to make my winter version of my blueberry slump. And both cranberries have a lot of pectin in them. As you probably know, if you've ever cooked cranberries to make a cranberry sauce. So I would get the cranberries started with a sweetener. I sweeten my cranberry filling with fresh orange juice and zest and some maple syrup because I am avoiding granulated sweetener when I can, when it makes sense, not always. And then dice up the pears small so that they kind of match the size of the cranberries, cook it until it's nice, taste it, and see how it sets, and then go ahead and make your strudel with that. You can make that filling ahead, chill it, and then use it when you're ready to assemble your strudel. That sounds delicious. Okay, Ingrid has a very interesting question here about the difference in usage between baking soda and baking powder. So I am going to my document here because yes, I know, but I also want to really tell you. Now, baking powder and baking soda are what are called chemical leavening agents. And this baking soda actually came out of my refrigerator. The baking soda that I use for my desserts is from Bob's Red Mill. It's considerably more expensive. I'm not saying you have to. It's just his process doesn't use any chemicals. So let's just define what they are. Both are chemical leavening agents. And that word chemical, it's not a bad thing. Vegan baked goods need more of a lift because there are no eggs. So most of the recipes that I write that I'm aware of call for both plus apple cider vinegar. Baking soda is also called, or really is, nothing but sodium bicarbonate. It's an alkaline white powder that's commonly used in households for various purposes, like to, when you're not using it in the culinary, to contain odors in your refrigerator. I use it with vinegar. It bubbles up, if you remember chemistry, to clean my wooden cutting boards. But baking soda is a base compound with a pH level of 8. So when it mixes with an acidic solution, it reacts to produce carbon dioxide, and that gas, that's the gas required to get that desirable lift in baked goods. I'll use it even a little bit in cookies. Now, cookies made with baking soda spread more than cookies made with baking powder. But baking soda needs an acidic partner, and it isn't just vinegar. You have to think about what you're using in your batter. It can be a wet ingredient like buttermilk, or, pardon me, I make my own buttermilk substitution with soy milk or oat milk and a little vinegar. It will behave like buttermilk. It will not taste like buttermilk. Yogurt, lemon juice, maple syrup is acidic, and brown sugar is acidic, and so is natural cocoa powder. Dutch processed cocoa powder doesn't contain enough acidity. So that's one reason that I'm really going all over the place here, but a chocolate cake recipe should tell you what kind of cocoa powder you're using. And if it doesn't, look at the leavening. If it's all baking soda or primarily baking soda, that is calling for non-alkalized natural cocoa powder. If it's mostly baking powder or all baking powder, then it's alkalized. So once the baking soda is paired with an acidic ingredient in the batter, it starts to react instantly. And that's why in recipes that call for baking soda only, you're told get that right into the oven straight away, so the leavening doesn't die down. Baking powder is a complete mixture. So this is double acting baking powder, meaning it reacts twice. The first time when you're mixing the batter and the powder dissolves, and the second reaction takes place when the heat in the oven happens. So are they, and baking soda is an ingredient in baking powder. I have this baking powder as well. It's called Featherweight. It's sodium free. I don't like it. I taste it. Now, here's Are they different? I love this quote from King Arthur Bacon, because many of you know that when people ask me, my students, anyone says, will it matter if I use X instead of Y? And I say, yeah, it will, because it will. King Arthur says, what to do if you don't have one? Can you substitute with something else? And they say, to put it briefly, don't substitute if you can help it. But should you be in a pinch, maybe in the middle of baking your brownie batter, there are a few options. Fran says, go back to what I said earlier and get yourself prepared when you're in a calm mood and do your mise en place. So you say, oh, I'm out of baking soda or baking powder. I had better go and get some. Baking powder can be used to replace baking soda, but it's not 1-to-1 ratio. In fact, you need 3 times the amount of baking powder as baking soda. So you can be quite sure that you're going to taste a slightly bitter, off-putting taste that will probably be there. Baking soda is actually 4 times more powerful than baking powder. So that's what I have to say about that. Yes, we use them. I use them almost always in tandem because I'm doing vegan baked goods and I need that lift. I need the immediate lift. I need something that's going to work with my acidic ingredients, and I need another lift when I am putting something in the oven. So I hope that helped you with that question, with that really good question. Ingrid wants to know about a quick appetizer hors d'oeuvre, like a great dip, simple but classy. Well, you're talking my language here. I love dips. I do. There's always hummus, which doesn't sound maybe classy, but you can make it look really beautiful with smoked paprika and herbs and things. And people love hummus, and it is something that's really quick. I went out with a couple of friends who were all members of Les Dames d'Escoffier Philadelphia. We went to a very beautiful swanky hotel the other night in Philadelphia, the Four Seasons, and it's a Jean-Georges von Richter restaurant. And we ordered a dip that was so good that Kathy Gold, who you have seen if you've gone to the library, the Ruby Live Events Library, and seen the vanilla live event, then you know Kathy Gold. But it was delicata squash and some tahini and za'atar blended, and it was as smooth as could be. And it was served with crackers, pita chips, and also fresh vegetables, crudité. So I think those are really easy and can be made very, very, very quickly. And happy holiday to you. And I hope you enjoy making your appetizers, Ingrid. Heather is looking for information about increasing quantities. She writes that she has to make 20 to serving 40s. What 20 to 40 servings of, and is looking for information on how to scale up. So what you're going to do is you're going to figure out the conversion factor. I use gram weight in all my recipes. When you look at my recipes in the course, or you look at the recipes in my cookbooks, you see that it will say 1 cup of this. Sometimes it says grams and sometimes milliliters. But I ask all my students to please keep a notebook and use a scale. I have several scales. And weigh your ingredients and see. I've been weighing a lot, so this is my little 50 gram weight so that I can see if my scales are actually in calibration. So what you're going to do is you put the number that you want on top over what you have. Like, let's say 60 over 48, 60 divided by 48 equals 125. Your conversion factor is 125. You know what's a really easy way to do this is one of my Essential Vegan Dessert students, who has much more of that kind of brain than I do, made an Excel spreadsheet for me with formulas. So I put the ingredients in, and in the next box, I can just say times 2, a half, a quarter, times 40, and so on. And it gives me the numbers. So good luck with that, Heather. It's pretty simple. Mary wants to know about my go-to egg replacements when baking. I don't have one go-to egg replacement because it depends on the recipe, and I don't enjoy reading charts where people say, use this or use that. It depends on what you're making. So many of my recipes and many of the recipes in Essential Vegan Desserts don't have what you would call an egg replacement per se. It's baking powder, baking soda, and vinegar, and the cake rises. And why is that? Because when I was creating modern vegan desserts coming out of the traditional kitchen, there were no egg replacers available. So think about the function of egg you're replacing. Liquid is easy, binding is easy, leavening. We talked about baking powder and baking soda. Today there are a lot of egg replacers. You can do a chia or flax egg, which is 1 tablespoon of finely ground chia or flax and 3 tablespoons of a liquid. Set it aside and whisk it. That's going to bind. It's not going to leaven. Some people are using aquafaba. There's a formula, aquafaba being the cooking liquid from chickpeas that we whip to make meringue. And Bob's Red Mill has a very good egg replacer. I don't like to replace eggs in a recipe if I'm converting from a traditional egg-based recipe. If there are more than 3 eggs, I might find some other things. I honestly think a combination of replacements is the best thing to do. And this is why we have a whole unit on this in the course, because there really isn't just one. Janet wants to know, this is an interesting question, general rules about freezing items in glass containers. That's actually very important. I do have glass containers in my freezer, but I leave a headroom of at least 2 inches, because you know, as you're freezing things, they're going to grow and you don't want the glass to shatter. So thank you for asking that question, Janet. Hi, Rebecca. Rebecca says, great to learn from you, chef. Well, thank you, Rebecca. Carol wants to know, Carol says, I would like to make a dark chocolate candy with a cooked and sweetened fruit. Peanut butter cup with fruit inside. Oh, that sounds really good. Well, if you're making a peanut butter cup, you're going to be painting the inside of a small candy liner, or there are silicone ones also that are very easy to use, and then putting some peanut butter filling in and then topping it with more chocolate and letting it set. I could see that with any, I'm going to try that, Carol. I could see that with a wonderful flavored date paste or the cranberry that we were talking about, anything at all. Just cook the filling to a point where it's nice and thick and tastes good to you, and let it set enough so that you can scoop it or cut it so it's thick enough. But that sounds absolutely delicious, and happy holidays to you too. So we got through all the questions just in time. I have an opportunity now to wish you all a very happy, stressless, full of joy holiday season. Let's all, everybody needs some love. Let's all wish for happiness and peace and better times, delicious food. And I am so looking forward to seeing you in 2024 in January. Take care, everyone, and best to you and your friends and family. Thank you for coming today.